Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
We are still examining the text in Colossians 1:18 that talks about the preeminence of Jesus Christ. There's so many things to say from this text that we can't exhaust it all in one or two or even three broadcasts. Now here's the text, Colossians 1:18. It says, "And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have the preeminence." You remember that this is in the midst of Paul's hymn of praise to Christ, which really is part of his prayer for the Colossian church. It goes all the way back to verse 9. But this is part of the prayer that is also a doxology of praise to Christ, and so that some people separate it from the prayer itself. It really is not of any great matter whether you include it or separate it, because it is a wonderful section all by itself. And this hymn of praise to Christ covers verses 15 through 20, and it builds up to the peak in verse 18, the one that we're looking at now, and then continues on with, in verses 19 and 20, with some things that flow out of what was said in verse 18. It goes on to say, verse 19, "For it pleased the Father that in him all the fullness should dwell." That's more explanation for why he has the preeminence in verse 18. And verse 20, "By him to reconcile all things to himself, by him, whether things on earth or things in heaven, having made peace through the blood of his cross." Now, there's more explanation, and these are wonderful, wonderful texts in themselves, which we will get to in due season. But we are still now dealing with this climax, this peak of his exaltation of Jesus Christ and his revelation of who Jesus Christ is. And I read it again in verse 18, "And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have the preeminence." So thank you for joining me on this Monday, January 4, which for many of you, I suppose, is the first, what shall we call it, normal day, back to regular routine after the holidays. And God has brought us to that place. We're back, many of you, back to your work schedule, back to your school schedule, back to the regular things that you normally do after having had an extended break during the holiday season. So we are back to our normal routine, but we are considering issues that are absolutely sublime. And thank you, those of you who helped us throughout the year 2015 to maintain the Beacon Broadcast financially, which we could only do with your help, and may we ask your continued prayers and support as we enter into the new year. You may recall that we have asked four questions of our text. The first three we've covered, the fourth one we're still working on. Question number one, what is Christ the head of? Answer, he is the head of the body, the church. Question number two, what is the meaning of this title, namely the head of the church? And we've seen that it means, among other things, that he is indispensable and he is supreme. Question number three, how did Christ receive this honor? And he did because of two terms that are in our text. Number one, because he is the beginning, and number two, because he is the firstborn from the dead. And I just remind you of these things. I'm not going back to explain them at this time. And that brings us to question number four, what is the purpose of this headship? And that's summarized in the last statement of the text, that in all things he may have the preeminence. That's the purpose of his headship. That's why he is the head of the body of the church. It is so he will receive the preeminence. He will receive the honor. He will receive the exaltation, which is truly his and which he deserves to receive. And so Jesus is supreme because of his supremacy in creation, verses 15 through 17. Jesus is supreme because of his supremacy in the church, verse 18. And then that brings us to consider a little more carefully this relationship between creation and the church. Now, are you following me? Let me back up and go over that again. Why is Jesus supreme? That in all things he may have the preeminence. Why is he preeminent? Why is he supreme in everything? Number one, because of his supremacy in creation. Back to verse 15, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. We're talking about the material universe. Verse 16, for by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. And verse 17 says, and he is before all things, and in him all things consist. Now, all of the contents of verses 15 through 17 have to do with the created universe and his relationship to that. He made it. He sustains it. He rules it. Therefore, he is supreme in creation. No argument there, surely, but now we come to his supremacy in the church in our text in verse 18. And, in addition to his supremacy in creation, and he is the head of the body, the church. Now, for some, that might almost seem to be an anticlimax instead of a climax. Because, in the estimation of some, the created universe, this vast, vast universe, is so much bigger, so much more important than the church, but evidently not in the estimation of God. And we need to understand what God is saying and adjust our thinking accordingly. All right, yes, he is supreme in creation, and that's important. That's marvelous. We've already been over those verses, and we could, I'm sure, profitably go over them again and again and again. He is supreme in creation. That's marvelous. But when we come to the climax of why he is supreme, that in everything he might have the preeminence, when we come to the climax of that, it goes one step further, one step above his supremacy in creation, and tells us about his supremacy in the church. Evidently, in God's estimation, the church is even more important, even more glorious than this vast creation. Stop and think about that for a while. And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have the preeminence. Now, that brings us then to this present consideration that we started on the broadcast Friday and continue today and will no doubt continue tomorrow, and I don't know if anything passed that or not, but this relationship between creation and the church. He is supreme in creation, and that is vast and amazing and mind-boggling. He is supreme in the church, and according to the way this text is written, that seems to be even more amazing, more mind-boggling, more important in God's estimation than his supremacy in creation. But what is the relationship between creation and the church? Because it's these two things that come together that give him his ultimate preeminence. Because he is supreme in creation and because he is supreme in the church as head of the body of the church, we come to this final conclusion that in all things he may have the preeminence. So we have two things. Are they two separate things that don't have any relationship one to the other? Or are there things that tie together the concepts of creation and the church? And that really is what I'm trying to explore at this time. Well, as we've already seen, I think I mentioned it on the broadcast Friday, there is an old creation, and that awaits the consummation, according to Romans 8:22. Right? I'll read, starting at verse 18, Romans 8:18. "For," said Paul, "I consider that the sufferings of this present world are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." Speaking about Christians, speaking about the church. "For," verse 19, "the earnest expectation of the creation." See how easily, how smoothly, how effortlessly, you might say, Paul moves from a consideration of us, the church, to the creation, how he's tying these things together. I go back to verse 18. "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us, for the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God." Here's a connection between creation and the church. Creation is waiting for something that depends upon the church. Creation is waiting for the earnest expectation of the creation, eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. Creation's fulfillment depends upon the church's fulfillment. Go on, verse 20. "For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, because," verse 21, "the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." I hope you're catching all this. We're told that creation has been subjected to corruption. It's under the curse. And as we're told in these verses, not really because of what creation did, but nevertheless, it got caught up in what happened, and we know what happened. Adam sinned, and when Adam sinned, God placed the whole creation under a curse. The creation over which Adam had dominion, and now his dominion has been cursed. So it got caught up in the curse, right? "But the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly." It didn't do anything to invite this, "but because of him who subjected it in hope." God decided to do it. God chose to do it. God's sovereign, God's supreme. God does what he chooses, but it's always right. Whatever God ordains is right. "Because," verse 21, "the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." So creation awaits deliverance from its curse that corresponds to the final deliverance of the church or of God's people. For verse 22, "For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." So here is a relationship between creation and the church. Creation's under the curse. The church is under the same curse. But the church, the people of God, the born-again people of God, have been delivered from that curse. But the final deliverance awaits the second coming of Christ and the resurrection of the body from the dead. And at that time, creation itself will be delivered from this same curse. Think about it. Come back tomorrow. Until then, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.